As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, Noah Vonleh, big signing by the Nets. We will talk about all angles of the Noah Vonleh signing. We will do our second annual, semi-annual edition of the Scary Hours Power Rankings. And we have an interview. Rudy Valdez, the director of We Are the Brooklyn Saints, a beautiful sports documentary based in Brooklyn. It's on Netflix right now. You can hear that interview at the back third of this show. Brian?
I'm there.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello. The pipes are not what they used to be, Mike. You can hear they're, as I get older, they're getting, anyways, how's it going?
It's excellent, Brian. I'm so excited to be with you.
I just got tunnel vision about aging and dying. But good.
Good to be with you. Go to theathletic.com/glueguys. Get yourself behind that athletic paywall, $4 a month to start. Rate and subscribe on iTunes, at BK Glue Guys on Twitter, netsdaily.com. Our mailbag is netspod@gmail.com. Brian, the Nets are not fully back. How are you?
I'm good. Gosh, what are the Nets? Are they back? What are they doing?
They're discombobulated. Exciting show. This is not necessarily an emergency pod, but it has the remnants of a possible emergency.
It's urgent.
Pod.
There's an urgent need. Yeah.
The Nets are, maybe Shams Charania of The Athletic is reporting that the Nets will sign Noah Vonleh with one of their open roster spots. I got to say, I've always wanted Noah Vonleh.
He's one of your boys. He's been on the list.
Well, he had that great season with the Knicks. Great. And I say great. It's like he had 8 points per game.
Yeah.
But to me, that's pretty great.
That's pretty great.
He had that season with the Knicks like three seasons ago. And he showed a little stretchiness. I think he shot 34% from three, something like that, at that period of time.
Rounding up.
Yeah. You always round up when you want to make your point.
Yeah.
I like it. I enjoy it. I think they need, I've advocated for them just to sign big people, and Noah Vonleh is of the phyla of big people, and I support the Noah Vonleh signing. Brian, how do you feel?
Well, it's hard to not be biased. I've been having you pour just unadulterated enthusiasm for Noah Vonleh into my ear for the last 3 years. So who can be objective with that going on? It seems like we're doing some interesting things in terms of shoring up that front line. Saw some Norval Pelle. Are we going Pelle or Pelle on this?
I think it's Pelle, right?
We should know this. We can look at it. Wait, it's got the pronunciation.
I mean, it
on.
Took us a while to figure out Rodion's Karutz.
It says Pell. We got Pell in the basketball reference.
Even better.
Norval Pell. It kind of flipped the wall one.
28 years old.
He's there. Similar size. I was actually surprised to see that Noah Vonleh has got, at least by Basketball Reference's standards, a full 30 pounds on Norval, your old friend, Norval Redenbacher. sorry.
Because he's popping on the court?
Wow. That doesn't seem correct. I don't know. That doesn't. Just based on the clavicle and up pictures on Basketball Reference, that doesn't seem right.
Would you guess would be more inaccurate, height or weight? Because I think it's weight. I think there's like
What I'm saying. There's no way Noah Vonleh has got 30 lbs on Treboy Norval. I mean, no. maybe 3 years ago, who knows? But what?
Norval Redenbacher. Yeah, that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life. So it's like this funny thing of where I don't think there would be any signing that Sean Marks could make for the end of the bench spots that I would be disgusted with.
No, these are great memes. Both good memes.
I'm excited for the rotating cast of characters who shuffle in and out of those end of bench spots who don't play. I think we're going to see Iman Shumpert pretty soon, but
I do think so.
Yeah, I like it. I like it all. I know Vonleh. I mean, he was a high draft pick. He had talent. He was productive somewhat. His averages are good. He's a big body, and he feels like someone that would fit exactly what this team sort of needs. I still think we're all kind of holding our breath for the Andre Drummond release at some point. Of the Cleveland Cavaliers, but
yeah, he's interesting, especially having played one game of Norval Pell, of which there was pros and cons to be sure. Pro, he contests mid-range floaters, a thing that DeAndre Jordan has not bothered to do in some time. so that's good. That's an improvement. Cons, he has some trouble finishing at the rim. Like we're going to have, that is not the early evidence of that was it's one game. Again, I'm open to the idea that there's some jitters. You're playing with James Harden on a team that's ostensibly trying to win some championships here. So there's some game one jitters. I'll allow it, but I've got my eye on that finishing around the rim game of Treboy Norval Pell.
Not to derail us too much, but I've been thinking this a lot lately as I've been watching the Nets games, and there's an extreme amount of pressure on our friend of the show, DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. It's too much.
It's obvious that Jeff Green started for him in the game before other friend of the show, Jeff Green, joined us on this show, which is a great interview. Everyone should listen to it. They're going to learn a lot. It's still in our archives. It's just the last episode. But so Jeff Green starts over him. And we know historically DeAndre Jordan gets very upset when he doesn't start because Kenny Atkinson was fired, partly because of that fact. I would think, and this is not even armchair psychologist because I don't have like a armrests. I just have, this is office chair psychologist. I would think DeAndre Jordan's not having as much fun as he thought he would on this team. And I actually think fun is like the main motivating factor for DeAndre Jordan.
I like this take. This is a good take so far.
I think that he's going to start having some sort of emotions negatively in terms of his situation. Because he's only playing 20 minutes a game. When he is out there, he's had very few like really good DeAndre Jordan games. He's been fine. He would be a good backup center. I just wonder if there's this like shifting priority of, they bring in Harden. Kyrie is obviously here and Kevin Durant are here. DeAndre came with KD and Kyrie. There's even moments when I kind of see KD talking to DeAndre as teammates do, but talking to DeAndre, it has the vibe of like, hey, why don't you play better?
Yeah, a little fervor, a little extra oomph.
Which is fine. Mustard.
Yeah.
This team is a contender. But I'm just saying, I think there's like something there. I think there's something that could shake. And also, if we are to believe the Andre Drummond rumors, which are, if you don't know, for people out there in the world, the rumor is that Drummond will eventually be bought out by the Cavs if they can't trade him, which they will not be able to do because his salary is going to be so large. And the second he is bought out, he will join your favorite team, Brian, the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder if that happens, like DeAndre is going to move even further into the bench and they're still going to do small ball lineups with Jeff Green. And then it's become like DeAndre Jordan's getting like 15 minutes a game. There's going to be a cause and effect. And I wonder what's going to happen. You know, DeAndre Jordan matters to the person. Do you agree with sort of what I'm seeing, what I'm sensing?
I totally do.
My computer screen.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. Cause like, I hate to say it, but it's a little bit of a self-evaluation situation that he needs to undergo a little bit, because he could have a lot more fun if he if he took himself out of that starting rotation and allowed, I mean, he doesn't, obviously it's not his role to like be like, hey, Steve Nash, I want to come off the bench, and that's just like not a elite basketball, I mean elite in the, not I'm saying like he's not an elite NBA player, but like, you know, as far as basketball goes, playing in the NBA is elite, not that kind of a thing to do, not a big dog move, right? To come off the bench. So that's an interesting situation. Also, the guys that were kind of lining up are still very much backups to the backup, like Noah Vonleh and Norval Pell, bless their hearts, are not really going to be threats for that starting position. So you're right. The Drummond thing is going to loom over his head, but I think ultimately it'll be a thing that makes him feel a lot better about his whole situation. And, you know, like nobody wants to be dogging DeAndre Jordan as much as we are, because he seems like a sweet guy and a fun guy who has a few limitations, but would be otherwise like a great, you know, 18 minutes per game backup center. A great one.
Like, yes.
Literally one of the best, you know, him, Dwight Howard, you know, I don't know, think of a couple others. Are like great backup centers, and you're lucky to have him. He's just being tasked with a bit too much, Mike. I think we can all agree.
Because what the Nets really need for that lineup, like I've talked about this before, you need basically tall Bruce Brown, right?
Yes.
So Bruce Brown, everyone loves, as they should. We've been advocates for Bruce Brown on this very show from the very beginning. But he is short and he can't do everything. And the starting lineup, if it's KD and Harden and Kyrie and Joe Harris, or take out Joe Harris, put a Jeff Green, you still need an energetic big who is willing to just throw his body around, to be kind of aggressive. And DeAndre at this point is just a drop center who is still fine defensively. Like, he's a positive defensively, but he doesn't bring the energy that you maybe need at this point, being 32 years old and 200 days, or 202 days old, as Basketball Reference says he is right now.
Bruce Brown has become such an interesting player in my mind, because he's really settled into this, like, I'm a center in a guard's body, like situation. Like, the shots that he's taking now are these, like, because he has so much lift on his like jump hook, I guess we're calling it. It's like, it's sort of a floater, but it also has a little bit of like hook to it.
Side angle going on. Like, it's not perfect.
No, it kind of reminds me of like those like push shots that Brooke Lopez used to do. But he's like really settled on that as like that's like option 1A in his offense, which is so weird for a guy his size and like with his build and athletic ability. He's just become like a fascinating sort of archetype of a player for me.
Yeah, if you go by defensive win shares, which is just not a stat I'm truly comfortable throwing around because I can't tell you how accurate it is, Durant is the best defender on the team, tied with DeAndre Jordan. And like, so DeAndre's defense still matters. Like, I think Nets Twitter maybe is uncharitable to our boy DeAndre Jordan, because it feels like he's the reason why Jared Allen's not on the team, and everyone loves Jared Allen so deeply. I just think that I don't know if DeAndre's going to rise to the level that this team needs. And they do. So, like, they're already weak at center without Jared Allen. And DeAndre being, like, the only guy, again, God bless Norval Pell and Noah Vonleh. This is not new, saying the team needs a center. It just, I think it's even more poignant now that we've seen DeAndre be the main center for long enough now that we're like, okay, this is who he is.
Right.
He is happy. He is great at like the high fives at the before the game. He brings a good smile to the court. But he isn't going to bring that energy, the dog energy that we need.
He would be great. I mean, like, I can continue to say this. His team defense is the problem, whereas Jared Allen's was, like, A plus for his position. And Jared Allen's, like, man-to-man defense wasn't that great. He would get torched pretty routinely by the Embiids of the world, where I think, like, DeAndre Jordan kind of has a better shot. I mean, Embiid's learning how to shoot threes a lot better all of a sudden. So that's, like, changed. But in general, I like him as a man-to-man defender a little bit better than Jared Allen in some cases. Anyways, getting too granular, but it's I'm just trying to, like, look for reasons not to hate on DeAndre. Try not to hate on anybody anymore. Not in 2021, Mike.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break, and we're going to get to Scary Hours Power Rankings. Mm.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right. This is the second annual, semi-annual Scary Hours Power Rankings. If you are new to the Scary Hours Power Rankings, it is our new tradition of ranking the Nets' big three in a sophisticated system involving both on-the-court and off-the-court production. Last time, I had it as Kyrie Irving as third, James Harden as second, and Kevin Durant as first. Let's see if our board is shaken up this time, Brian.
Great.
Coming in at number three this week, the board has shooken.
Oh, my God.
James Harden.
Wow.
James Harden Fall coming in last. Grace. He's been the most consistent of the, I've seen this talked about on Twitter, the notorious BIG three Nets. You know, the notorious big three Nets.
Never heard that. What's the reference? I don't get that.
James Harden's been great on the floor. I've loved his facilitator nature. I love that he keeps moving the ball. He is the most consistent Net because he both isn't hurt like Kyrie was against the Sixers, and he isn't re-yanked from the floor like Kevin Durant was. But he's three because he hasn't done anything really dynamic lately in the way that I would like him to do both off the court and on the court. Mm-hmm. He's just been a choir boy.
Yeah.
You know, a church mouse, if you will. And maybe that's good for some people. But for me, I like to see more dynamism. Dynamism? What's the word? Being dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dynamism. I like to see that. You watched the Sixers game.
I did.
How did you feel about that performance? I mean, that was the James Harden as, like, chief dog again game.
Yeah.
And obviously the game didn't go well. How did you feel about that performance?
I don't know how I was talking about this in the Discord. Again, shout out to the Discord. Link's in the Twitter bio. Check us out. Fun during game times. I was thinking about this. Like, I didn't really understand Nash's decision necessarily to play him as much as he did for the first three quarters of that game. And then, like, obviously the game got out of hand and he didn't play in the fourth quarter, which was mercifully, you know, that was obviously the right decision, but it was after quite a few reps and we had gotten pretty deep into the bench at that point. So in terms of, like, hedging your bets against, like, maybe we can, like, pull out a sneaky win. I kind of was like, I'm not so sure about that. I'd way rather, like, not stagger, like, the big threes minutes, like, nights off, I guess, minutes. In that way, like, if we're gonna go two guys out, let's go all three out at that point. That's just maybe I'm being overly protective. I know, like, James Harden is an Iron Man, and I'm not used to having iron people on this team. nor am I, or like Kenny Atkins is when was notorious, even when we had young guys who should be playing, you know, 36 minutes and over, he was still playing, you know, D'Angelo Russell, like, you know, 28 minutes a game and stuff, like, just to troll him, and all of us, but yeah, so, that just from a macro, like, I had a couple of issues with in terms of his on court, you know, utility in that game. It was, it's good. It's still like, I'm still interested in his, like, desire to, like, put the Harden ball to bed, you know, despite everything. Like, that was the game where it really should have happened. And there was more of it than usual, but still it wasn't like that 44.17 assist sort of, I'm just going to will this into existence thing. Like, that wasn't there. And I think, like, I'm almost wondering if, like, he doesn't want to, even on the nights where he can do it, like, I don't want to, you know, put my resume in for a job I don't ultimately want, you know, like, I think he might, maybe unconsciously or not, like, he doesn't want to do that or be in a position to have to do that all the time anymore, maybe. So doing it on nights where, like, Kyrie and Kevin Durant are out so that he can, like, maybe eke out a super hard fought win against a team where they are, that's a very good team and hard to beat even with our best players. So I don't know. There's a couple of things going on with that, but yeah, I mean, in terms of what, like, what it actually looks like, obviously it's great. I mean, he's become quickly my favorite player to watch on the team, even despite his reticence to do the Harden ball thing.
Well, I like him because of it, right? Like, yeah. I enjoy the restraint. You know, there are some filmmakers who, if you let them go wild, if you let them, you know, if they don't have a good editor and they just make a 3.5 hour long movie, it's a worse movie. You know, and you actually want someone, if you have all this footage, you want actually more, you want to cut some things, you want to cut more than maybe you want to, because less is more. Mm-hmm. James Harden is my less is more. I love, like, it's just been a weird experience to have gone from literally not wanting to watch him play basketball, mm-hmm. or how they played in Houston, to being so, it's just so enjoyable to see him float along the floor and get the ball quickly and make quick moves and make plays. You know, in that game against the Sixers, he was still 26-10-8, only two turnovers, which is really good. You know, a 10-2 ratio for Harden. You know, I agree with you. I think it's, like, mentally, in terms of, like, the Harden ball, like, if there was going to be a game to do it, this would have been the one. He just doesn't want to do it. Like, mm-hmm. it, and I think that's a positive. Like, he is focused on, like, yeah, he could have dialed it up, but he could have had, like, a 38 field goal attempt game, like some crazy astronomical number where he just goes back to dominating. But it's almost like when, so some baseball hitters are afraid to go into the home run derby because they think it screws up their swing, because there's, like, a very specific type of swing that you're going through to just hit home runs as opposed to actually having an at bat. I feel like for Harden, for him, it would mess with his mind again to try to do Harden ball as opposed to what he's doing in Brooklyn. And so, you know, I like that he isn't amping it up in the moments when he's the only person out there of the scary hours, big three. In this game, though, I actually think it's good that he played because it allows sort of, like, Joe Harris to continue to play at the level that maybe you want him to. And Landry Shamet gets off 17 shots. That felt like obviously it was the best Landry Shamet game we've had.
Are you buying or selling Shamet stock right now?
Oh God. I think I'm, oh God, Brian, you put me in a corner here.
Sorry. I can't, I'm not supposed to do this. We signed an agreement.
It's a difficult emotion to process.
Okay.
Because I've been a pretty loud Landry Shamet supporter, even in his darkest moments on this squad where he was getting DNP. And I was like, they should really give Landry Shamet a shot. Now it's like he needs to play well enough to be the guy that they can trade and get someone for, there right? Like that's where he needs to be, because he's the only person on the roster who really has, like, any kind of, like, long-term sneaky trade value. It's obviously, you know, like, you're not going to trade the big three. DeAndre Jordan's untouchable at this point because he's making $10 million a year and he has, you know, he's not that good at basketball fully. Joe Harris has trade value, but you're not going to trade Joe Harris. Like, I think he's too consequential to the team. And so then if you just go down the list, it's like, it's Bruce Brown who doesn't have that much and Shamet still does. And so if he starts playing better, you can think about flipping him for a wing on some team, right?
Can I say a dumb suggestion for Landry Shamet?
Yes.
I think that he should take harder shots. When he was making shots, in the extended garbage time there, it was because he was, like, careening off screens and stuff like that. And I find that if you're in a slump, shooting super queued up corner threes is a real bad way to break out of it. And in the flow, a little bit more tricky. You know, it's like, you know, when you're skateboarding, right? And you want to get out of a slump, you know,
right?
Going for some harder tricks, you know, just sort of sending it, maybe landing something. It's a good way to, like, you know, get your confidence back all of a sudden, because there's no risk and failure at that point. You know,
this is like the way I play basketball.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I know I can't make layups. Like, that's right. The kind of guy I am. So I refuse to be open for open layups. Right. I will purposefully
take a contested layup.
Contort my body. Yeah. Dwayne Wade my body. So it looks like I'm trying really hard because I know I'm going to miss either way. Might as well miss spectacularly.
Right, exactly.
It is a good point. You know, there's, I don't have the stats. Obviously, these stats are out there, but like, you know, the Nets could be shooting better from three than they have been this year. And part of what's been going on is that, like, we talked about this with Jeff Green, where like James Harden has basically never in his career since Oklahoma City has taken an open three, mm-hmm. right? Like he just doesn't do that in that offense. Now he is. Joe Harris has been missing threes that he normally would make because he's like basically always open. And I think it messes with you as a shooter. It's just like a weird thing. Mm-hmm. It's like there's actually a defensive move to not run out on 3-point shooters because all that like open space just makes them, players aren't used to sort of the timing of being that wide open.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Landry Shamet should be shooting harder shots.
Wow.
That could be it. That's a nice trick.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two in our scary hours power rankings, Kyrie Irving. Now, Brian, Kyrie is number two for a very specific reason.
Okay.
So there is, I don't know if you know this fella on Instagram and Twitter. His name is Max Is Nice.
I saw this controversy. Yeah.
So Max Is Nice, if you don't know, he is a like an NBA player impersonator. He will wear the jersey of some player and act like them in a very comedic way to get likes on Twitter and Instagram.
He's a knockoff of B-Dot, right? Like B-Dot was the, yeah. Does B-Dot he and B-Dot work together? Do they collab ever?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't, you know, I got to be honest. I have not dove into the oeuvre that is Max Is Nice.
Tweet at us. Let us know if you got that.
Please don't tweet at us. So Max Is Nice did a KD and Kyrie bit for his little Instagram thing. And in that piece, Mr. Is Nice burned a massive thing of sage as a joke. Mm-hmm. He was acting like he was Kyrie and he was burning sage. So Kyrie on Instagram commented and said, you know, he said this. He says he respects the comedy, which I love that he said that. Yeah. He's like, I respect the comedy first and foremost. I respect comedy above anything. But then he says, quote, tell the ignorant Max Is Nice, do not disrespect my ancestors with his gestures. Burning sage is sacred. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like if that happened to me, right? If I was caught being insensitive in a moment like that, right? Insensitive in anything. You know me, I'm afraid to order food at a restaurant for fear that I will like impress upon a waiter that I'm like trying to tell them what to do.
Right.
Not who I am. You would think Mr. Max Is Nice, who I would think part of what he would want to do is to celebrate players and to be in a good relationship with players. You think it's a quick apology, right? You think that's what would happen, right? But that you'd be wrong, Brian. You yourself would be wrong in that. Max challenged Kyrie to a boxing match, like he was some barstool goon, and then a bunch of people
who are watching these boxing matches. What is going on here? What is happening? So like I watched.
It's not us. It's not even I.
But even for like the YouTube influencer, and then also like just like drunken overweight people like on these like rough and rowdy things. It's like I don't know. I don't understand that market, Mike. I get. Here's the thing. A little bit of respect, okay, for the professionals out there. That's what I think. Okay, I'm flipping it on it. You know these guys work hard, and now we're getting YouTubers and. You know, B-Dot impersonators, B-rate B-Dots who are, you know, getting this attention. Although obviously that's not going to happen. But anyways, we'll do a deep dive on that next time.
Well, I will say, I think it is a tradition to have celebrities punch each other in the face.
Ever since we
had this celebrity death match.
Wasn't the Screech like one of the first ones? RIP.
All right. Rest in power.
Yeah.
Screech was one of the first. I think Mitt Romney was in like a celebrity boxing match.
Stop.
Bring it up. I believe. And what was the claymation show?
Celebrity Deathmatch.
Celebrity Deathmatch. Look, I'm Googling Mitt Romney boxing, and he boxed Evander Holyfield.
Stop.
Yeah. This was a thing. I mean, it's always been a thing, right?
What is this fake news? I don't get this.
It was for charity, of course.
Like he just like got in the ring and they like pretended, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
Yeah.
Okay. Romney looked good.
Okay. Like, good buddy.
They're doing great.
But anyway, so out of 10. Good.
So Max is nice. Instead of apologizing for being insensitive, takes the moment to try to, you know, start a boxing match with Kyrie. A bunch of people jump in on Twitter basically saying, you know, like, Max, you're dumb. You're kind of being a racist and all this stuff. Max continued to fight back all over Twitter. Kyrie stayed out of it. But so all of it offers up. Eventually, Mr. Is Nice offered up an apology. But he still was hiding behind the shield of comedy.
Yeah.
Saying, I'm a comedian. I do things to make people happy. And that's what this was for.
Yeah.
All of this is to say, good on you, Kyrie. You know, God bless you. Because the thing is, it must be annoying as hell to see people make fun of you on a 24-hour basis when they at you on Twitter and at you on Instagram and blah, blah, blah. And you see this clown do this thing where he's making fun of your, like, so I feel like, you know, we can joke about sage burning, right? I imagine it's a thing where if we did any analysis, I'm sure it's a very serious thing. It'd be like if someone was joking around with a menorah, like if someone was holding for Denny Avdia, if he did Denny Avdia and he was just carrying around a menorah, I would be upset.
Yeah, that'd be a little bit much. That'd be.
I actually think it would be funny.
That's pretty over the top. That would be.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, that's a good parallel to draw. I like it.
Thank you. So I think so. Good for you, Kyrie, for speaking up.
My favorite part about him speaking up is that he was like, I appreciate the comedy, and then took all the air out of the room, and then with no comedic veneer, you should not have done that.
It's like when you give, like, I don't know if you've been, like, we have to give criticism to someone at work or something.
Yeah.
You're like, love the effort.
Yeah.
But let's walk down this rabbit hole for a second.
Dress you down with no uncertain terms. Yeah.
So Kyrie is number 2. So that would leave us, of course, to the second annual winner of the second annual Scary Hours Power Ranking, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is the champion once again, and we will be sending him his amulet as soon as we can. He is number 1 for launching the #Free7 movement. If you're unfamiliar, of course, this all links back to that Raptors game on Friday night when Durant was told pregame he wouldn't be able to play, and then he was put into the lineup, and then he was pulled again from the lineup. Chaos ensued. We understand that Durant is probably going to play this upcoming Friday. He'll be allowed back on the team. KD was, I so appreciate him. I appreciate, this is the energy I want to see from Kevin Durant. This is what he said that very night. Okay. So people were, you know, like questioning the NBA on Twitter. Someone was questioning the NBA's PR statement. And this is what KD said. Yo, at NBA, your fans aren't dumb. You can't fool them with your whack ass PR tactics.
There it is.
#Free7. And that night on Twitter, Nets fans began channeling the same energy that QAnon supporters carry with them on a daily basis.
Okay.
But like opposite of racist. It's like positive QAnon.
Positive
QAnon. KD Anon?
Nice.
KD, thank you. So I like this. I like, you know, my fear again with the team is that KD has won he's won 2 championships. Kyrie has won 1. Is there too much passivity? No. I want angry KD. I want #Free7KD. That's what I want.
The Free 7 thing was a riff on Free Britney. Is it a direct one-to-one? Did you watch that? There's a documentary on one of those streaming things for the Britney Spears Free thing.
Did you watch it?
I caught 45 full-blown minutes of it just to get up to speed.
What did you think of it?
gosh. Should we start another episode now? Or there's lots. There's lots there.
Did you learn a lot?
I did. I learned mostly about the sort of legal prerequisites of a conservancy. God, I don't even remember now. The conservatorship, that whole concept was a little bit unclear for me, and it became pretty clear. They do a good job of
the national parks, like conservation.
No.
There's a lot of national parks talk.
It's a big like ecological, you know, documentary. I can't even remember the term. I think I had a conservatorship.
I trust you.
Anyways, it's about like, you know, a very specific kind of legal status that you have over another person, usually for elderly people who can be taken advantage of if they're not, if they don't have somebody controlling their finances on their behalf, things like that. That happened to Britney back in 2007 when she was having her mental issues. And ever since, she's been sort of under like this kind of like very unique legal like situation with this, with her parents and the conservatorship thing. It's interesting. I mean, for legal reasons, it's interesting.
Quick killer comparison.
Oh, good.
The three Scary Hours superstars as pop princesses from the 90s. So you have Christina Aguilera.
I mean, Kyrie's Britney, let's be honest.
Yeah, Kyrie's Britney Spears.
Not to draw like negative parallels there, but just the all around like fascination, you know, and the ability to say interesting things. That's what we're going. Christina Aguilera is a good, Harden on that?
Pretty talented.
Yeah.
Pretty Harden. I so greatly respect Aguilera's talent that I guess I would go Kevin Durant.
Mm.
Just because, and like,
and you can make an argument that when she was dirty, Christina, that was sort of like the Warriors version of KD. You kind of went dirty there.
And she was also in the Moulin Rouge song with Missy Elliott and Little Kim, or Kim was definitely
Pink.
And that was like the Warriors. Were
no,
teaming
wasn't
up
Lil as, Kim. Oh yeah. Maybe it was Lil Kim. It was, Oh Lord.
You're gonna make me Google Moulin Rouge Christina Aguilera. That's what you're doing. Happy to go down there.
Oh, God. Christina I know Aguilera. The fourth person.
Song,
Pink was
Lady
definitely
Marmalade.
In there. Yeah.
Maya and Maya. Pink. Pink was in there.
I was saying Pink. I told you Pink.
Who is the Pink equivalent of NBA star? Karl Malone to me is Pink. Really? Because Pink to me has never been good, but has existed continually. And Karl Malone just continually put up buckets, but I don't think he's as good as, like, his numbers don't indicate actually that he's, like, I think he's worse than his numbers.
Shout out to Big Tom, my friend's dad, grew up next to him in New Jersey, who every day, to this day, listens to Pink while he runs. Okay, big shout out for Big Tom.
Big shout out.
To this
huge,
day.
Huge yeah. shout out. The biggest that, possible shout
jagged
out
little
you.
Pill every day.
That's it. So Durant is number one. So to sum up, we've done two of these so far. Durant has won them both. And Harden and Kyrie have both been two or three, like flipping there. So Kevin Durant, tweet out your address and we will send you the amulet as soon as we can. Real quick thing before we get to our interview or my interview, sorry, with Rudy Valdez, again, director of We Are the Brooklyn Saints. You can watch it all right now on Netflix, a beautiful documentary about a peewee football team in Brooklyn. Super special. I don't know if you saw this, but the Knicks have made a trade for Derrick Rose.
Did see that.
Okay.
So a lot of Oladipo talk too, which
is there Oladipo buzz?
There was some buzz.
Okay. Here's my quick take. And I feel like Knicks fans probably agree with me. So the fear of Tommy Tibbs is that when he would come in, the team would begin, even if they wanted to commit to, you know, like a rebuild and a slow burn, and no matter what would happen, Tibbs would push the evac button and they would try to begin to win sooner rather than later. And so Derrick Rose is that. He's the stepping stone to even higher floor. So if you bring on Victor Oladipo, you know, it's like, Derrick Rose, of course, he's better than Dennis Smith Jr. And I don't quibble with the second round pick. That doesn't bother me. Like, if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm like, oh, no, a second round pick. What Derrick Rose does is it does stop quickly and Barrett from playing as much together as possible. Ntilikina is not playing basketball anymore, so he's basically done with the Knicks. So maybe that's not much of a loss, but like, still, you kind of want to see what you have, if you have anything left in him.
What happened with Dennis Smith Jr.? Why did he like completely his rookie year? He was a guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's some personal stuff in there that I don't full grasp of.
Okay.
He wanted to like go to the D League. He was ready to play in the D League this year just to even get minutes, or the G League, excuse me. Yeah, he was like a guy in the draft that I think a lot of people were super excited about because he could dunk and he was.
But he put together like three decent years in Dallas, or I mean, like above decent in the first two.
So I just think it's funny that the Knicks. I think what the dream scenario for the Knicks would be is for Knicks fans, excuse me, is basically like, who cares if they like, who cares if we as Knicks fans, if they were Knicks fans, make the playoffs? It's all about, can the young guys play? And then we'll be, have all this cap space, and then we can continue to grow, get a good draft pick. Maybe the Mavs don't make the playoffs or something like that. And then you go from there. But the Derrick Rose piece is just, it's a step towards not rebuilding.
He's also having like a down year too. Like I'm looking at his numbers right now. Is there any explanation for that? Is he just like getting a little bit buried in the rotation or what's up?
Yeah, I think it's just a bad Pistons team.
Yeah.
That he's on that probably was not prioritizing what he wanted to do. I mean, the Knicks right now are the eighth seed. They are 11-14. They have one more win than both the Raptors, which are ninth, and the Cavs, which are 10th. I mean, they're in the playoffs or in the, you know, the play-in games right now. It just feels like this is the move that is the precursor to the Knicks again, like shipping a first round pick for Kevin Love or something like that. And that's what I hope for.
There's nobody with like, I'm just looking at his numbers again, like for his percentages, like they are so different from year to year. Like it's like 1 year he shot 37% from three, and then another year he shot 21% over 64 games and 57 games.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Incredible. Thank you all for listening. Coming up right now is an interview with Rudy Valdez, who is the director of We Are the Brooklyn Saints. You could watch We Are the Brooklyn Saints on Netflix right now. In the interview, we talked about what he learned in the doc and about one of Brian's favorite movies, Hoop Dreams.
Love that movie.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Obviously, the reviews have been. Do you read reviews? Is that a thing?
I don't. You know, it's so funny. I don't. And when the New York Times review came out, I had 40, 50 people text me and call me and email me, and they all prefaced it by saying, "I know you don't read reviews, but please read this one." They were and so I it took every. Ounce of strength. Like I think it's my biggest flaw is like I can't read reviews for a lot of reasons, but I read it and it was very humbling because, you know, we tried to go in and tell a new version of maybe a story or a device that you've seen a million times and try to make it nuanced and different and come from a different POV. And it's subtle in some ways, but it was just really wonderful to see somebody truly get it and get what we were trying to do. And it was very humbling to read that review.
Yeah. And I'll kind of, for listeners who haven't read the review in the Times, it really was, you know, it's about as good of a review as you could possibly hope, right? For your story. And those things matter desperately to getting people to watch the process. So tell people what the series is. It's a 4-part series that's on Netflix right now. We Are the Brooklyn Saints. Tell people what it is if they don't know.
Yeah, it's we basically followed this organization called the Brooklyn Saints, a football organization, over the course of their season, the 2019 season. You know, I think the easiest way to describe it is it's a football show that's not really about football. You know, that we use the sort of the markers of a football season to sort of encapsulate when we're capturing footage, but you know, we're really trying to tell the human side of the people who dedicate their time and their efforts and their lives to empowering and guiding, you know, young men. And you know, the story sort of takes on a life of its own off of the field. And you know, I like to say, and my hope was when we started this, that when we did show football footage and we did show games, that it was more than just touchdowns and scoreboards, but it was character that you were seeing on the field, and you know, letting it carry from off the field and on the field, and letting it really blend seamlessly throughout.
You know, it's East New York. You know, I kind of got emotional watching it because it showed a life that we don't have right now, right? It shows close connections to literally people on a bus going somewhere is like something I was like, oh, look at that. People happily sitting close together. As you were probably, I imagine you're in the editing booth with, you know, the editor, or you're watching these images, but out the outside world is not that. How did it feel kind of that you're basically showing a time capsule of what life was like pre-COVID in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny because as we were starting the post-production process, we started to hear about COVID and the possibilities of what might happen. And I give major props to my producers and, you know, my post-production team. They saw the writing on the wall very quickly. And so we moved from this office in the city to remote editing pretty seamlessly. And I remember the first day of lockdown sort of logging into a Zoom with a bunch of, you know, squares in front of me. And then we were like, okay, I guess this is how we're doing this. And so we edit remotely for a long time. And you're right. Like as the pandemic continued and lockdown continued, you know, we did long for those long days out in the sun with these kids and hanging out with these kids and giving high fives and you know, riding on buses, because it felt more distant as the time went on. And yeah, you're right. It really truly is a time capsule leading right up to the last days of some semblance of
humanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
What made you want to choose this story, this team, this location? Because I, you know, I was digging through some of your history, not digging through, you know, on IMDb.
Uh-oh, don't dig too far.
But you've done a lot of different types of work, very personal work. What made you want to do this story?
So this story was actually brought to me by Imagine Documentaries. And so Justin Wilkes and Sarah Bernstein over there and Amy Berg from Disarming, they had the IP for this book called Never Ran, Never Will by this author named Albert Samaha. And they wanted to do a series. And they called me in and asked if I would be interested to do that. And I was very interested. I wanted to figure out what the angle was and what they were hoping. And they gave me this book that was, you know, much like our series, is a book that's, you know, structured around a football team called the Mobetta Jaguars from Brownsville, Brooklyn. But it also goes into the stories and the humanity of the different people that make up that organization. And that team disbanded about 10 years ago. And some of the coaches went on to form the Brooklyn Saints. And so it was a natural conduit. There was a character who was in the book that is one of the people that's actually Vic in our show, Vic Davis, Vic and D'Lo were actually in that book. And so they were sort of the conduit to saying, why don't we follow this team? And, you know, to me, I wanted to pick a team that was, you know, similar in demographic to the book Never Ran, Never Will. But, you know, this was, you know, East New York is a little different from Brownsville, but they were, you know, a lot of the same characters and a lot of the same demographic. And I wanted to go in and tell that story from a different POV than what you normally see when you hear about, you know, an inner city and a football program and what that means. You know, I wanted to strip away the markers that usually have when you're going into a place like East New York or Detroit or Los Angeles or something like that, where you're immediately hit with, here are the statistics of how bad it is. Here are the things that are so dangerous. Here are all, I wanted to take those away and lead with the people, lead with the humans, and you know, not really go for that low hanging fruit of, let me continue to perpetuate the stereotype of what it means to grow up in an area like this. There are other truths to that area. And I wanted to seek out some of those other truths and let that sort of shine throughout this.
So what did you learn? You probably learned a million things that you didn't know before, but is there anything that you took away from your whole experience following this team?
I mean, I learned a ton. And I think that my process of being a documentary filmmaker is to learn in the process of making and telling the story, because, you know, I don't want to go in with this idea of this is who I think these people are. This is what I think this community is. And this is what I think this is going to be about. I like to come in and learn what this is going to be about, learn what these people are about, and learn how I can help share that story in a way that is different and comes from a unique point of view. And so I will say the one thing that I learned, and it's maybe a little off topic, but it was just something I learned as a father. You know, as a father, the hardest thing and the toughest thing to wrap my head around is watching my daughter fail or lose at something. You know, you want to protect them from those emotions and all of those things. It's something that I hold so dear. You know, I never want to see her fail. But, you know, throughout the course of this season with the Brooklyn Saints, you see these kids lose. You see them get beat up. You see them get, you know, really, you know, beat down in some of these games. And at the end of the game, these coaches and these parents are saying, stand up. We're going to learn from this. And next week, you know what? We're going to come and fight again. And to teach that and instill that in these kids at such a young age that it's okay to lose, that it's okay to cry. And both of those things are okay because you get a chance to get up and fight again. I mean, I would get goosebumps while filming, watching these kids learn these life lessons that they can take on with them for the rest of their lives and have it be so genuine and not just, you know, a saying or some stereotypical scene where it's like, you know, we're going to go on and win the championship next week. It's like, no, you get up and you fight again. You pick your head up. So that was something I learned.
Hoop Dreams to me is like it's the OG sports doc. I remember watching it, like it would be on like local Fox, like it'd be on like the local stations and it would just be on in like the weekends. And I'd be like, what, you know, as a kid, I was like, what is this? I didn't know the whole history, but I would just start watching it. Do documentaries like that influence you when you're making what you're making? Or do you try to have more tunnel vision, just thinking, I'm making my story. I can't think about sort of the, you know, the inspirations and the comparables in sports. How does that work for you?
Yeah. So Hoop Dreams is certainly, you know, it's considered maybe one of the best documentaries to ever be made. And it was certainly something that influenced me as I became a documentary filmmaker. It was one of those films that I was like, okay, let me go down the list of what I should be watching, because I didn't know anything about documentary when I decided to become a doc filmmaker. And I watched that film and it inspired me and it started to lay the groundwork of what it means to have a voice and to tell people's stories and to give them agency. I think that there's certainly the idea, you know, there's a line from Hoop Dreams that always sticks in the back of my head. And it's that line when the kid, AG, I think is who says it. He says, you know, everyone's always telling me, don't forget me when you're famous. And then he looks right at the camera and he says, I hope that they don't forget me if I'm not. You know, it's like something like that. And I was like, what an amazingly, you know, true and human statement for him to, you know, that little moment for me encapsulated that we can have a camera pointed at somebody and we have all these expectations and all of this storyline that we have in the back of our head. But at the same time, there's a human inside of that is probably full of doubt, that is probably full of fear that they're going to let everybody down. And it was such a human moment for me that it made me realize that there's another layer to all of this documentary filmmaking, that we can go out and we can be a part of telling somebody's story, but we don't have to own that person's story, that person should be able to own their story and control their narrative. We're there to help give it a platform. So all of these, you know, films like Hoop Dreams and, you know, When the Levees Broke, and, you know, there are all these films that really show humanity and start to scratch the surface of, you know, how we're able to, because inherently putting a camera in a room changes the room, but we strive to have the most honesty coming back into that lens as much as possible.
Well, I'd recommend for anyone. I mean, what's great about We Are the Brooklyn Saints is that it's not ageist. You know, anyone can watch it, right? You know, you could sit down with your kids and watch it and you can really enjoy it. It's on Netflix right now. I imagine everyone has Netflix. It's a great watch. You'll really enjoy it. It's four episodes and about how many minutes of footage overall?
There are about 48 minutes an episode, something roughly like that. Yeah.
So you can just get through it in one day and it'll be a great day.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, you can binge it very, very easily. Yeah, to me, it almost feels like just a long film as opposed to, you know, episodes. It really plays out and the stories continue throughout. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on here. And I hope people go check it out because it's really it's a local film for most people who listen to us. And it's a special, special piece of art. So thank you.
Thank you very much.